Chapter 33. Sheriff Victor Goodman did the obvious cautious thing, which was to drive the route between the old pumping station and the farm where the eyewitness lived, which was 11 miles to the north and west of town. On the way out there, he drove slowly and paid careful attention to the right-hand shoulder of the road. There was ice here and there. Overall, the land was pretty flat, but at a detailed level there were humps and bumps and bad cambers and ragged edges. According to a deputy who knew the guy, the eyewitness drove a well-used Ford Ranger pickup truck. It was too old for ABS, and assuming it was unloaded, it would be light and skittery at the back end. Skids and slides were possible, even likely, because it was late and the guy was probably hurrying. And a skid or a slide at speed could put the guy 50 feet into a field easily, and maybe even tip him over if the tires caught a rut or a furrow. So Goodman used the beam on his windshield pillar, near and far, back and forth, slowing to a walk on the curves, making sure. He found nothing. The house the guy lived in was a modest affair. 80 years previously, it might have anchored an independent one-man 50-acre spread. Now it was a leftover, after 2 or 3 rounds of farm consolidations, these days either rented to or provided for a laborer. It had a sagging ridgeline and milky glass in the windows. It was dark and still. Goodman got out of his cruiser and pounded on the door and yelled and hollered. Then he waited. And 3 minutes later, a disheveled woman came to the door in nightclothes, the common-law wife. No, the guy was not home yet. No, he didn't make a habit of staying out all night. Yes, he always called if he was going to be late. No, she had no idea where he was. So Goodman got back in his car and drove the same road back to the pumping station, slowly and carefully, using his pillar spot all the way, this time paying close attention to the other shoulder and watching the first 50 feet of brittle stubble beyond it. He saw nothing. So then he drove other routes, in descending order of likelihood. His county was not geographically complicated. The central crossroads created 4 quadrants, northwest, northeast, southeast, and southwest. Each one of them, to some varying extent, filled in with random ribbons of development. It was conceivable the guy had chosen to thread his way home through an arbitrary and indirect route. Conceivable, but unlikely. Gas was expensive, and there was no reason to add unnecessary miles. There was no reason to think the guy had a second lady friend willing to receive a late-night visit. But Goodman was a thorough man, so he checked. But he found no old Ford Ranger pickup trucks parked anywhere in the northwestern quadrant, or in the northeastern quadrant, or in the southwestern. The southeastern quadrant was the least likely of all. To get there, the guy would have had to turn his back on home. And why would he do that well after midnight? And the southeastern quadrant was mostly commercial anyway. The 2-lane county road leading south was lined on both sides by small strip malls. The road leading east was the same. There were seed merchants and dry goods stores and groceries and gun shops and pawn shops. There was a bank. There was a pharmacy and a John Deere dealership. All of those establishments closed at 5 o'clock each afternoon. There was angled street parking in front of the stores, uniformly unoccupied at night, and larger lots behind, mostly empty, and old barns used for storage, all locked up tight. Sheriff Goodman checked them all anyway. He was a thorough man. He drove slowly south, looking down the alleys between the buildings, then looping back north through the back lots on the right, then going south again and paying attention to the other side of the road, before coming north again through the back lots on the left. He found nothing. He repeated the same procedure on the road leading east, all the way out into open country, and then back again, checking both sides, checking the alleys, checking the storefronts, checking the rear lots. And there it was. An old Ford Ranger pickup truck, parked neatly behind Gus Bantry's hardware store. Reacher folded the inadequate map and put it in his back pocket. He checked the view out the office window. Still dark. But dawn was coming. He looked at the fat man and said, "You want to rent me a room?" The fat man didn't answer. Reacher said, I could give you money and you could give me a key. You could call it running a business. The guy responded by stepping out to the well behind the counter and unpinning a notice from the wall. It was a sheet of paper laminated in plastic, with a cursive script and pale inkjet printing, spelling out a simple sentence. Management reserves the right to refuse service. The plastic was lightly dusted with gypsum powder from the bullet hole. Reacher said, I'm the good guy here. You heard me on the phone with the federal authorities. It was an amicable conversation. The guy said, I can't afford any more trouble. You've had all the trouble you're likely to get tonight. From here on in, it's going to be all about an investigation. You could have 10 agents here for a week, or more than 10, or more than a week. How does that compare to your usual winter occupancy? The guy paused. Reacher said, Okay, we'll all go somewhere else. The guy said,
$40.
$20.
$30.
Don't push it. These guys have an office of budgetary responsibility. They see something they don't like, they'll call the IRS just for fun.
$25.
Deal, Reacher said. He dug in his other back pocket and came out with a wad of crumpled bills. He counted out 25 bucks, a 10 and 2 fives, and 5 singles. The fat man said,
A week in advance.
Don't push it, Reacher said again.
Okay, 2 nights.
Reacher added a 20 and another 5. He said, I'll take a room in the middle of the row, no neighbors either side.
Why?
Because I'm a solitary soul. The fat man trawled through a drawer and came out with a brass key on a leather fob, which had the number 5 printed in faded gilt on one side and some mailing instructions on the other. He said,
You have to sign the register.
Why?
Iowa law.
Reacher put himself down as Bill Scowron, who had hit .375 for the Yankees in the World Series just weeks before Reacher was born. The fat man handed over the key, and Reacher headed for his room. Sheriff Goodman called Julia Sorensen on her cell. He told her he had found the eyewitness's truck. Sorensen asked,
Any signs of a disturbance?
Goodman said, No, it was just parked like normal, behind a hardware store, real neat and tidy, just like the Mazda behind the cocktail lounge.
Locked?
Yes, which is a little unusual here, to be honest. People don't normally lock their cars, especially not 20-year-old beaters.
No sign of the guy himself?
Nothing, like he just vanished.
Is there a bar nearby, or a rooming house?
Nothing, it's a strip mall.
I'll get some lab people to go take a look.
It's nearly dawn.
All the better, Sorensen said. Daylight always helps.
No. I mean Karen Del Fuenzo's kid will be waking up soon. Any news?
The driver called me again. They dumped him. Del Fuenzo was still alive, the last he saw of her.
How long ago was that?
Long enough for the situation to have changed, I'm afraid.
So I'm gonna have to tell the kid.
Just the facts. Don't say anything more until we know for sure. And call our school principal. The kid won't be fit to go today. And maybe you should keep the neighbor's kid home, too, for company. Does the neighbor work days?
I'm pretty sure.
Try to keep her home. Del Fuenzo's kid is going to need a familiar face.
Where are you now?
I'm getting close. The driver is meeting me at a motel.
Why would he do that?
He says he's an innocent passerby.
Do you believe him?
I'm not sure.
By that point, Sorensen had just passed the Shell station. She was turning right and left, endlessly south and east through the empty darkness, following the little blue accommodation boards. Her GPS showed the motel location about 30 miles ahead. She was about 30 minutes away, she thought. Her Crown Vic was doing okay across country. She was gunning it hard on the straightaways, and then braking hard and hauling it like a land yacht through the turns. Like all bureau cars, it had the police interceptor suspension, which was better than stock. Not exactly a NASCAR prospect, but it was doing the job. Apart from the tires, that was. They were shrieking and howling and complaining loudly. She was going to need a new set. Stoney was going to be thrilled. Reacher unlocked room 5's door and went inside and saw a standard motel arrangement. a queen bed on the left, a credenza opposite its foot, a closet in back in line with the credenza, and a bathroom in back in line with the bed. The walls were wood grain laminate, a lot more orange than any natural tree, and the floor was brown carpet, and the bedspread was a color halfway between the two. The room was no kind of an aesthetic triumph, that was for damn sure. But he didn't care. He wasn't planning on using it. He switched on the bathroom light and left the bathroom door half open. He switched on the lamp on the far side night table. He pulled the curtain shut, all but an inch wide crack. Then he stepped out to the cold again and locked up behind him. He crossed the front lot and crossed the road and walked west into a frozen field. 50 yards, 100. He hunched down in his coat and turned around and squatted down and looked back. Room 5 looked exactly like it had a guy in it, just sitting there, just hanging out. Reacher had survived a long and difficult life by staying alert and being appropriately cautious. He wasn't about to let the Scandinavian woman catch him unawares. He was going to hang back and stay out of sight until he was sure who she was and who she had brought with her. Any kind of backup or SWAT team, and he was out of there, never to return. If she was on her own, then maybe he'd stroll over and introduce himself. Or maybe he wouldn't. He watched the road and waited.